Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 US-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. The new year doesn't have to mean a whole new you. Sometimes it's just about feeling a little less burdened. And one thing, for instance, I'm working on is letting go of that constant pressure to have everything figured out. Like, I need to be perfect, or I am behind if I'm not. Therapy can help you identify what's weighing you down or holding you back by giving you an unbiased perspective so you can better understand your relationships, your motivations, and your emotions. And BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a qualified therapist. Their therapists are fully licensed in the U.S. and work according to a strict code of conduct. They also do initial matching work for you so you can focus on your goals. You'll fill out a short questionnaire with their experience and strong matching process. They typically get it right the first time. And if you're not happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time from tailored recommendations. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with qualified therapists. Sign up and get 10% at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go-live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification, and they're satisfying to scratch no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture. And when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space. Just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
All right, it is film study for Ken McCusick. We're back after the bye week, just like the Ravens. We get to talk about the Week 11, the third shutout of the season as the Ravens shut out the Packers 23-0 in Green Bay. Ken McCusick, how are you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
I am. I'm doing well. I'm back from my little vacation, so I'm readjusting to the normal busy
stressful life of just the norm.
How what were the highlights of the vacation? Give me one good one. I heard you got a bet down on the Ravens.
Yeah, I did get a bet down on the Ravens, and you know what? The odds are still better in my favor. I got 80-1 odds for the Ravens to win it all. That feels about right. The chances of the Ravens. That feels pretty good. I think after they won in Green Bay, I believe the odds are better, which for me is worse. Means I bet at the right time.
That's correct.
So, yeah, I did. I placed $20 because why not? I was down in the Bahamas. Why not take a chance to win $1,600?
We'll have some fun with that the rest of the year, I'm sure, revaluing that ticket.
Right. We'll see how long it lasts. I mean, I was happy that it's still worth it, as the Ravens right now are in a playoff spot, correct?
Yeah, they're in very strong playoff position. I mean, it really would take a true pessimist, you know, somebody who thinks that Baltimore is inferior in a lot of ways, to really think the Ravens are not in the prime spot for the playoffs. They're a big favorite against Houston. It's a big game coming up, but you know, they're about a 72-73% implied chance to win that game. That would almost secure the playoff spot, that game alone.
That is crazy to think about, the talks we were having just a few weeks ago, that they are still in this. It shows you really how mediocre this league is this year. And if the Ravens have shown us anything, it's get in the playoffs and then anything can happen.
That's right. I mean, one of the points is that the last five times the Ravens have made the playoffs and started on the road, they've beaten their opponent by an average score of 28-10. So they've handed them their collective asses. And that's Miami in 2000, Miami in 2008, New England in 2009, who am I forgetting here? Kansas City in 2010, they decimated them, and Pittsburgh in 2014.
Yeah, it's... We all know that as the Joe is a guy who becomes a different guy in playoffs, and as frustrating as he's been wanting to watch this season, we know if he can get into the postseason, he becomes that playoff Joe.
I certainly hope the offense can put some things together, develop some sort of very basic identity, even if it's just like the 2000 team, that they can run the ball a little bit and wait for the defense to do something special. And this defense is, as we saw yesterday, is perfectly capable of doing some very special things.
You know, at the end of this episode, we're going to go through our defensive MVPs. And I wasn't sure when I was putting my MVPs together if I was allowed to put Breshad Perriman on my defensive MVP list for this week. Because the Ravens made a big move by setting him back.
They did. They deactivated him. Harbaugh had some things to say about it in the press conference. He said he hopes he's pissed off about it. He probably is, but that he'll be back. And I don't know. I mean, honestly, I thought the Ravens' remaining career for Breshad Perriman might have been 7 weeks going into this game, and now it's six. So if they cut him at the end of 3 years, because there is a cap savings, I don't think they'll do it, but there would be a cap savings, then they, you know, they've only got 6 weeks of Breshad Perriman left, and you don't sit him on the bench for one of those if you're seven. Cut it to six now. Right. You don't sit him on the bench for one if you intend to have him be a franchise player.
Right, sure. Well, he tried to watch the game yesterday, but dropped the remote.
Oh, that was a lot of setup for that joke. I'm sorry. I should have let you just get right to it.
Much setup. I was trying to think of some way that we got to transition into this game, because the Ravens played a great game yesterday, and well, the defense did. They got their third shutout of the year, which is hard to do. The list of teams who've made three shutouts in a year, it has a lot of Super Bowl winners on that mm-hmm. list. It's rare, and it really brings me back to, all right, is this defense really this good, or is Brett Hundley this bad?
It's a little bit above. This is the Ravens' third shutout of the season, not their first. Okay,
right, so it's not, let's start with Brett. That. Yes.
So they beat a playoff contender, what, 3-4 weeks ago, whenever Miami, they played them 40-0. They destroyed them here, yeah. But yes. And Miami is now showing they're not a playoff team, very definitely, and will not be close to getting a sniff of that action. And they beat a Cincinnati team that now may be the Ravens' biggest threat for the playoffs, 20-0 on the road in the opener. So I'm very impressed with what this defense has done. And you know, obviously, Hundley played a part in what happened yesterday, but I thought the secondary as a whole played extremely well and effectively allowed the Ravens pass rush to get home in some additional time. So we'll talk about that when we have a chance.
Right. So I guess how significant is now that there's been three shutouts?
Well, in terms of history, there's only been two teams with more, that the 2000 Ravens with four and the 1976 Steelers with five. So it doesn't happen. And, you know, if you look at the list, there are a bunch of Super Bowl winners in that group, including the Ravens, of course. The Steelers did not get it done in their year of five shutouts. They lost to Oakland. But anyway, it's a group laden with Super Bowl winners. The last team to do it was New England in 2003, and they of course won the Super Bowl.
The Ravens still have the Bengals and Browns left on the schedule. You think they can get their fourth shutout?
Well, I hate to look ahead of that. I mean, Terrell Suggs really talks about it the right way. It's like you're pitching a no-hitter whenever you got one, and you just, there's a whole lot of potholes that can go wrong. And, you know, even if you come up against the worst 1988 Orioles you're pitching against, the chance of pitching a no-hitter against them is still very slim. So I think, you know, we're really
sure.
It's not a high probability.
Right, of course. And even if your defense is playing amazing, the offense can still give up points also.
That's right. The offense can give up points or just get you in field goal range. If you give up scoring opportunities in the first half, that's usually the way shutouts get burned, because the field goals will be taken then. And Jimmy Smith bailed him out in this game with the interception when they were in the red zone, and then they really never got another good shot at it. They got close enough at a later point in the game where they had to go for it on fourth and six, I think it was. And at that point, if the Ravens are up, I think, 13-0, so the touchdown, even touchdown lead method was protecting the shutout at that point. So lots of ways it can get blown.
Right. The Ravens going into this game got bad news before even, I guess, getting to Green Bay with the fact that Ronnie Stanley wasn't going to be playing.
That's right. So Ronnie,
yeah, and I mean, obviously that really hurt the offense. How big of a deal was that?
Huge. I mean, Ronnie Stanley obviously being out is their best remaining lineman. Some people would say Jensen, but Stanley at left tackle is certainly their most important, even if he's not their best. And then when he got moved out, of course, Hurst has to take over at left tackle. And then you lose your good left guard, and you turn him into a terrible left tackle. And that's exactly, of course, what happened yesterday. And even though the Packers lost Clay Matthews to a groin injury fairly early in this game, it could have been a lot worse. They still had a field day knocking Joe Flacco down when he did throw the ball.
Okay. All right. So I'm going through some of these things that did not really the way the Ravens planned. And the other thing is, I guess, they got caught with only 10 men on the field.
Yeah, well, you know, this is one of these things. You come off a bye week, and we expect some things. We expect the team to be healthy, and I think we got that. We expect the team to have some new wrinkles offensively and defensively. And we saw a little bit of that, but frankly, I think on offense, they had to adjust to the fact that they weren't going to have Ronnie Stanley, and that they had left guard and left tackle were in flux, and then those two players having been replaced meant they probably had to scrap some of the game plan that they had already. They probably had to say, well, we can't do that anymore. So anyway, if you're coming off a bye, you expect to have a more scripted, easier chance to take advantage of the opponent. When they played Tennessee, for example, Adoree Jackson, who's a starting cornerback for them, had a 20-yard run on one of the first plays from scrimmage. And that's the kind of thing that you might see in a game like this. Well, anyway, the unscripted really kind of ruled in this game. So we talked about the Ronnie Stanley thing. The second thing was the Ravens having this 10-men on the field situation. So it came late in the game. 2:12 left in the fourth quarter. So I don't know how many doghouse points are going to be assigned for this, or if there's going to be a scaled back number of doghouse points for this. But it's a hanging offense to let this happen. So on the broadcast, you can see Mosley in the center of the defense, and he's looking around. The Packers have a two-back set on the field. So the Packers have already gone into give-up offense. They basically were going to run the ball at least once out of this set to just get the game over, down 23-0, avoiding any additional injuries. So the Ravens had three defensive linemen in the game. Well, when they have three defensive linemen in the game, there's only one set of personnel that goes with that. You have four defensive backs. They had that. You have two outside linebackers. They had that. Of course, they counted up, and they had three defensive linemen. They had that. And then they need two inside linebackers. And Mosley counted. It was only himself. So he looked like he was about to call timeout. Then the play started Mosley rushed up, dislodged the football from, I think it was Williams for the, or Mays for his second fumble in the game. Their right tackle fell on the ball, and they got a gain of 5 out of the play. But the funny thing about it was, not funny thing about it was Mosley, after the play, punched the ground really hard. And he was on his knees as they went to the two-minute warning. At the same time, two other things happened. So I'm very fearful, that, by the way, that Mosley's hurt and the club's not saying anything about it yet. But we may find that out as the week goes on, particularly on Wednesday, that he's on the injury report. But Weddle raised his fist to the sideline as if we had a heavy personnel group on the field or some other such measure. But anyway, it looked to me like Weddle also saw that they were short on personnel. Immediately, as soon as the play was over, Kemalai Correa came strolling onto the field and buttoning up his chin strap. Because it might have taken longer to decide who the proper player was, I don't think that would have happened unless he was the guy who was supposed to be in there that series. But I can't say that for sure. It might have been Kemalai, and it could have been Pino Owosu. It could have been either of them, but it was definitely an inside linebacker who made the mistake. And then when they came back from the timeout, Mosley left the field, which he never does. So he took the series off, and Correa and Owosu were the two inside linebackers at that point. So if I had to guess, I think it's probably Correa, but it could have also been Owosu.
All right, and Harbaugh came out today and says that Mosley has a ankle sprain, nothing negative.
Meaning his x-rays are negative?
Yes.
All the other things? Okay.
Right.
So hopefully nothing serious out of that. Thanks, Josh. I did not hear that yet.
Yeah. But hopefully, yeah, hopefully that's something that he just gets over this week.
Okay.
And they can move
yeah,
on.
Yeah, the team absolutely cannot play without him. He's as significant as Stanley in terms of the importance to holding the whole defense together.
I do like Harbaugh's comments after the game yesterday with Mosley saying that he didn't think it was serious and that if he's hurt, we're the dumbest coaching staff in America.
Yeah, they do usually take out the stars right at the end of a game like that.
So. Yeah, so hopefully it is just minor.
All right, but they didn't address the 10 men on the field, did they?
I did not see anything about that. I was just checking up on Mosley.
Okay. They had a when a 10-man field occurred against Pittsburgh, and I think this was in about 2012, Shockey Brown, must have been after that, Shockey Brown was still on the team, and he was cut immediately the following week. The play happened on 3rd and 33, and Shockey was the nickel corner. So I think that's a passing situation maybe, and he should have known to be on the field. Well, he didn't get on the field in time, and they ran the play on 3rd and 33. And amazingly, Dumervil sacked Roethlisberger anyway for the third straight sack in one series. But Shockey Brown got cut over that. So we could see a doghousing for this from Harbaugh.
All right. Yeah, we do know he likes the doghouse. All right. The Ravens seemed to be playing a lot of dime yesterday, and the Packers were avoiding it. There was a lot of no huddle.
Yeah, there's a really good amount of no huddle on third down, and Rich Gannon did the game, and he commented on it constantly, really, on third down. Here's the Packers again trying to keep the Ravens' exotic looks off the field. Exotic looks, I don't think Rich Gannon's actually ever met Dean Pease in terms of the exotic looks, but the dime defense, maybe from Dean's perspective, would be an exotic look, so maybe that's fair.
Right.
And anyway, they got the dime on the field 19 times during the game, and on those 19 plays, the Packers gained only 2.3 yards per play. They were sacked 4 times, and they turned the ball over twice. 19 plays.
That's pretty good.
So that's pretty good, yes. there were 3 times where the Packers kept the Ravens from getting the dime in on a 3rd and 4, a 3rd and 7, and a 3rd and 10.
All right.
The 3rd and 4 happened in Q1, and they threw a slant to Nelson for a gain of 7, first down. The 3rd and 7 happened in Q2. They threw a 6-yard pass to Adams. It didn't convert the play, but it set up 4th and 1, and then they converted that on the ground. And then the third time, it was 3rd and 10. It was late in the game. Q4, 12:52 is if you want to go back and look at the play. And Vontae Adams was slot right, and Patrick Owosu had to cover him, and no match for him. Adams ran a slant and caught the ball 7 yards from the line of scrimmage, ran for 8 more after the catch, and converted a 3rd and 10. So it was important for the Ravens to get their dime on the field. And honestly, it's something where if you're two guys who have to come on and off, really understand it, it shouldn't be hard to switch personnel, even if the other team is trying to stop you. So as long as Owosu and Levine are both completely cognizant of the situation, and Levine always would be on the sideline, but Owosu might be on the far side of the field making a play and then have to get to the opposite sideline, he's the player who really needs to know very quickly, I got to get off the field here, based on down and distance.
All right, so since that worked for the Packers, I imagine that's something the Ravens will be talking about this week. And adjusting?
Yeah, probably. I would hope that they would get that right. I don't think it's something difficult to overcome.
It's not something we're gonna let other teams are gonna be taking advantage of. It's something we should adjust and be okay.
That's right. I mean, Manning was always the king of getting extra man on the field penalties on the defense by getting the line of scrimmage and snapping the ball very quickly. So the Colts were very well trained on that. I think most of the teams, you know, particularly those with younger quarterbacks or that are on the road and they can't really run their offense on the road as fast as they can at home, I think it's very difficult to be able to do that to keep the other team from substituting.
Okay. With Brett Hundley, I guess there was some pressure on him, and it seemed like the pass rush was coming in from the secondary. I know I saw Jefferson come in a few times, right?
Well, they had a couple of blitzes. We'll talk about that a little bit. But what I really want to talk about here is the fact that the Packers were granted ample time and space a very high percentage of the time on 25 of 42 dropbacks, 60%. So that would normally cost you the game under normal circumstances. But the six sacks that the Ravens got, despite the fact that they only got 17 non-ample time and space opportunities, were largely a function of the secondary holding up for an extended period against Hundley. So they made it difficult for Hundley to find a target, even though he's strolling around the pocket at will, usually rolling out also, and had, you know, 4, 5, 6 seconds on some of these plays, and he made some really poor decisions at the end. So even when they had ample time and space, which I define as a three-second pocket and the ability to step into your throw, even when he had that, he gave up 3 sacks and had 2 quarterback hits that he took. So that's really unusual. For a whole season, Flacco might have about 4 sacks he takes with ample time and space. So they're very unusual.
Now, see, I saw that develop throughout the game, and that had me a little bit concerned because of the amount of time we were giving him. Mm-hmm. A good quarterback doesn't let you get away with that.
You're right. I mean, Green Bay certainly has good receivers, and I think Green Bay's receivers are pretty good about working their routes through to extend them because of the kind of quarterback they have. Because Hundley is a scrambler, and he can create a secondary pocket. You know, they complete their routes, whereas it's something I have a problem with the Ravens receivers is I don't think they work to complete a route beyond about 4 seconds. And, right. And so when Flacco is granted extra time, he still checks down because nobody's still running their routes in the secondary.
All right.
You know,
right. So the Ravens, I guess, stayed back and just waited and let Hundley make the mistakes.
Yeah, and he sure did. He made a bunch of mistakes. If you look at the success they had by the number of pass rushers, by far the most they did is rush 4. They did it 31 times. That included 4 sacks and 3 turnovers, and all those 3 interceptions in that case, an average of 3.8 yards per play. The one time they rushed 3, they got a 13-yard sack out of it. And then they rushed 5 10 times. And in that case, I kind of think you're doing Hundley a favor to get his receivers open. And those 10 plays, they had 8.5 yards per play. So obviously more was less for Dean Pease in terms of the pass rush this week.
Right. Yeah, that's something, again, that keeps bringing up that question of how good is this Ravens defense. And I feel like I've been asking this question since week one, as I can't figure out this team. But hopefully that means other teams cannot figure them out either.
Right. Well, I'd like to see them have a little bit of variation of game plan. I'd like them to show that, you know, it's Pease can blitz 6 times when it's the right thing to do. And obviously that wasn't the right thing to do here, and he had called a great game. Nothing, can't say anything bad about Dean Pease coming out of the game. He got the dime on when he should have. He was effective at beating the no huddle to get the dime on for the most part. You know, they'll improve on it and they can do a little better. The pass rush worked out, you'd have to say. You know, they stopped the run effectively. Just everything really went right this week. But when they do play a different quarterback, I want to see that they'll try a different strategy to beat him.
All right. Well, I will find out, I guess, this week with the Texans. Monday night at home, that's going to be a huge game.
It sure will. So an AFC game, obviously, that's big, because winning an NFC game, this was not a must-win for the Ravens. It helped a lot.
Right.
And obviously what it says about the team is more important than the actual win itself. But the AFC game, they can't really afford to lose one at home that they should win, like the Texans. And this will do wonders for their playoff chances if they win it.
Great. Good to hear. Let's look at a few individual players. And let's start with Willie Henry. Because he had two sacks.
Yeah, Willie Henry had two sacks, and so he had half a sack coming into this game. So he quintupled his NFL total of sacks, got his first two full ones. Both of them were kind of slow-developing sacks where he cleaned up effectively. The first one was on an ATS situation. The second one, there was pressure before he got the sack, but he cleaned up. So in any case, I was excited to have him chase down the play. I'm very excited about how much of a motor Henry has for a big man. He's got the ability to elevate, got the ability to beat double teams. He's got a good first step. There's just a lot of things to like about Willie Henry. He played 52 defensive snaps in this game, and he's now leading the team, leading the linemen in snaps on a regular basis. I do think it would be better if he played a few less snaps and was more rested as the pass rusher. Pearson and Williams each played a little fewer snaps than I would have hoped or expected them to in this game.
Okay. Bowser, I'm not regretting the jersey purchase yet, but he's not getting much playing time.
No, it's such a crowded outside linebacker position, and of course we talked about that in previous weeks to talk about why Correa's move to inside linebacker was probably a good one, but Bowser had only six snaps in this game. He batted a pass down on his very first snap, so you think, if anything's going to earn him more snaps, if he could play like that.
Right.
And then he did not do anything except come close on a pressure one other time. He had four pass rush snaps, actually rushed the quarterback three times, dropped coverage once, and then he also had two run snaps. So good game for Tyus. He has got to get his playing time at some point, but the Ravens are just a very crowded group of outside linebackers.
All right. Fun guy to watch, Matt Judon.
Another one of the crowded competition there. Outstanding game. Two sacks, a forced fumble. He only played 38 snaps, so he's very well rested in those terms. He's had five sacks and 25 tackles now in his last five games. He was a pleasure to watch in this game. He was the beneficiary of Suggs' incredibly savvy play, where Suggs actually diagnosed a screen pass after the guy was already by him, then still dropped in to cut off the passing lane. Hundley brought the ball down, and Judon took care of the rest with a 12-yard sack, 13-yard sack.
Right. And then Za'Darius Smith, he made himself known.
Oh, Za'Darius Smith, huge game in this one. And kind of went unnoticed because he didn't pick up a sack, and three guys had two sacks. So right there, he's going to be the kind of the left out. But he had three quarterback hits in the game. And the three quarterback hits, the first one was intercepted by Weddle. And he hit the guy as the ball was coming out. And that was that horrible floating pass that Weddle intercepted. The second intentional grounding was the second quarterback hit ended up being an intentional grounding for Hundley. So intentional grounding is 10 yards and a loss of down. So effectively that is a sack, but it doesn't count in the stats that way, unfortunately, for Za'Darius. Right. And then his third, he got a quarterback hit late in the game, 2:25 to go, and the ball floated out to Humphrey, overthrow to Jordy Nelson, and Humphrey took it back to the 3-yard line. So great game for Za'Darius Smith in terms of the effect of his pass rush.
All right. You mentioned Terrell Suggs and his defensive savvy. How did he do the rest of the games? Good game?
It was a good game. I didn't put him on my list of MVPs because he had two early offsides / neutral zone infractions, which held the Ravens up on the first drive and threatened the shutout. But he did have two sacks in the game, and he really should get an assist on a third sack. He also had a forced fumble. So, you know, he did an awful lot well, but he did have those two offsides penalties, so I left him off my list. Plus, he seems to be on the list every week this year. So, very fine year for Terrell. I think in this case, honestly, he took advantage of a couple of tackles who shouldn't be there normally in the NFL. Not only were the two tackles that the Packers started, not normal starters. They had a guy hurt at right tackle and replaced by yet another depth charge into the practice squad where they brought on Spriggs to play some. So Suggs had a good game, but he would not normally be able to do that to average offensive tackle talent in the NFL.
All right. Hill was inactive this week, which meant it was Webb and Kennedy sharing roles. How do you think that played out?
Yeah, that's right. So Webb played 18 snaps. All his snaps came at slot corner. Kennedy played 33 snaps. Those were mostly at slot corner, but he played on the last drive, and it might have been even a little bit more than that. He played at right corner, replacing Jimmy Smith. So Kennedy got his first real trial on the outside, but the 33 snaps is a very good sign for him. Love him for next year as a long corner who can move to the outside. He had something happen in this game, and actually Jimmy Smith bailed him out. But the initial, the interception by Smith, it started with three receivers on the right side in a bunch formation. So there's three of them over there. And when you have that, you kind of automatically play zone on that side and not man, which means your three players are each responsible for patrolling a certain depth. Rather than patrolling a specific man, because they can cross each other in various ways. So it started like that, and the three of them were over there, two corners and a safety were over there. And then Cobb, who's the most dangerous receiver they have, motioned to the left side, and Kennedy was late chasing him. And he ended up in no man's land, you know, two-thirds of the way over to the to the left side as the play was snapped. And Hundley noticed it, immediately threw the ball up for Cobb in the end zone, and Jimmy Smith dropped off his own coverage assignment and floated back a little bit in the end zone and had an easy pick on the play. But a very alert play by Smith to drop off his own man, realize what read Hundley so quickly, or that probably would have been a touchdown and the shutout would have been ruined.
Yeah, the secondary played really well, it seemed like, this week. Let's close out with Weddle and Jefferson.
There was one more I want to really mention in this one. We maybe could have talked about him early, but it's Marlon Humphrey.
Oh, I totally forgot about Humphrey. His first interception.
First interception in this game, but had a great game in general. He allowed two completions, 14 and 11 yards. One he denied any kind of yak. The other one was on a slant to Devontae Adams that would have been very hard to defend. But he also had a beautiful punch out on the right sideline versus Adams, when Adams just made a catch on the sideline and Humphrey turned around late, but then punched the ball loose. It's just a great strip that you rarely see. Unfortunately, the last time I can really remember seeing a strip that good was Sterling Moore on Lee Evans in the end zone at New England.
You got to bring that up.
Yeah, I got to bring it up. Anyway, I deal with analogy always through Ravens history. That's right. Kind of my way, so you know how I am. But then anyway, late in the game, he collected his first career interception, ran it back to the 3-yard line, obviously very excited about it because he thought it secured the shutout. Then they scored on the next play, and they gave the Packers another chance to advance the football. But the Packers at that point had enough. They'd packed it in and ran the ball and ended up not converting even one first down and punting on fourth down. So great game for Humphrey. I think he's got the start now. He replaced Carr after Carr had played the first, I want to say 22 snaps. No, it was less than that. Might have been 17 snaps. And Carr had allowed two long completions, a 17 and a 33 on the first drive. And Humphrey then replaced him, played the last 49 snaps, and I believe he now has the job at left corner until something else changes. So it makes sense. Your first-round draft pick should be starting. And now it looks like he's got his job.
So what does this mean for Carr's future?
Well, I think two things. For this year, Jimmy Smith is still walking wounded, apparently. And as great as he's playing, they're going to need to continue to replace him for about a third of the snaps per game. So Carr, I think, probably moves into the Humphrey role and replaces Jimmy Smith for maybe a third of the snaps per game. And maybe more than that, if the Ravens start having some games wrapped up, they're going to want to really, really take it easy with Jimmy Smith. And I think that Humphrey plays every snap basically the rest of the season. I think he moves into the Carr role, does not leave the field. And then we continue to see what we've seen, which is some combination of Webb, Kennedy, and Hill in the slot. And for next year, that's the other thing. I guess it's likely the Ravens will not pick up the option on Carr, which we kind of mentioned in the defensive roster evaluation. Right. They save $4 million by not doing it, and they have Kennedy, Jimmy Smith, and Humphrey then as their three primary outside corners, and there's almost no other team in the league that has that kind of depth.
That's awesome. That's exciting for not just now, but the future as well.
There you go.
All right. Real quick, Weddle and Jefferson before we get to our MVPs.
Yeah, I mean, Weddle and Jefferson, this is an important usage point, is I think that they really looked back at these two over the bye and said it is really appropriate to change the utilization of them, because we've mentioned that Eric Weddle has had really a kind of a bad year close to the line of scrimmage. He's had trouble tackling. The big tackle where he tried for the strip against Howard of Chicago cost him the ball game. And he's, on the other hand, has played very well on the back end, had his fourth interception in 10 games, and interceptions are not that common in the NFL anymore, so that's a really good total. Whereas Jefferson, he came to the Ravens with more of a tag of being a close-to-the-line-of-scrimmage guy, more of a pure strong safety, really good coverage on the tight end skills and good run defense skills. He put those on display like nobody in the game yesterday. Had two really nice run tackles, one for a gain of two, one for a gain of nothing. They were both very impressive. He came way off the line of scrimmage for that stuff for no gain. That was just extremely impressive. So anyway, I'm happy with the way Jefferson was used. I think there are more opportunities for the Ravens to play single high, get Jefferson on the tight end directly, and use some short-range coverage skills that I think he's better suited for. In some ways, he's like Levine in that you couldn't really trust Levine to play on the back end effectively, I don't think. But Levine has terrific anticipation and ball skills in underneath coverage, and I love him there. And then you can also add his skills as a pass rusher. So, Jefferson creeps up the line of scrimmage, supports the run very well, and I think the Ravens have finally come to that conclusion. I think we'll see much more of Weddle on the back end and Jefferson up front the rest of the way.
All right. That's, again, all stuff to look forward to. And I think you talked a few weeks ago about the usage of Jefferson, so it was nice to see that adjustment be made. Let's get to our defensive MVPs.
All right. So do you want to start with number three?
Sure. I've got number three, and I've got Za'Darius Smith for his three big hits. Really getting involved with those two interceptions, especially.
Outstanding choice. And, you know, I'm looking at this back and forth. Za'Darius was the guy that I really thought about adding that I didn't. You could make a case for a number of players here, obviously, in a 23-0 win. My third pick, Marlon Humphrey. Great game. Seems to have secured that LCB spot. We'll see where it goes from here. Very excited to have such a promising player, and let's see what he can do.
All right. My number two is Chris Hewitt, the secondary coach, because I don't remember the last time the Ravens secondary has played this well.
You know, that's a really good one in terms of that. They gave forever, and they certainly gave the pass rush time to get home. I love that pick. And normally, you know, when you pick the cat and this and that, you know, I'm not all that.
Oh,
really,
I'm not
pick.
Done yet. But yeah, that's no, and that's because I wanted to. I was figuring out, well, who do I give this to? And I said, well, I could give it to Jimmy Smith. Well, actually, Weddle or Humphrey had his first. Or yeah. So
they all had great games.
They all played well.
Okay, so my number two pick goes to Patrick Owosu. I don't think he was the one responsible for the 10 men on the field. Not that that meant the game, but Owosu went down to the bottom of that pile and fought for a football that had already been recovered by the Packers and took it away from him. That's great play in the NFL, led the team in tackles with 10, and he had two really nice plays where he exemplified what's going on in that secondary. He had extended coverage twice, which denied completions, and he kept his coverage radius such that those balls had to be overthrown both times, and I was very impressed with that. So great all-around game from Patrick.
All right. It's always good to see new names on the defensive stars list. And my number one is Brett Hundley, because I still have concerns of maybe this is just a bad quarterback.
Oh, boy. You won't let it go, will you? Well, third shutout of the year here.
Should I go back to the middle of the show when you said the Ravens sat back and let Hundley make his own mistakes?
Well, you know, if you're just going to quote me, and I'm going to be just upset about this.
I'm just
going to
say
you're right. So you're right.
I mean, probably should have had Hundley second, and I probably should have put Chris Hewitt as number one. But either way, the second.
I can understand either way. It's a legitimate concern is that the Ravens are going to have more trouble with better quarterbacks. This is not a bad offense. I mean, they've got good receivers, but they do also have a lousy offensive line, and you could have blamed it on them too.
Yeah. So. But if you want to play a fun game, look at the Ravens' schedule and look at what we would classify as real quarterbacks that they've faced. The NFL does not have many great quarterbacks right now.
Right, and there's no middle class in the NFL. So you got the top quarterbacks. There's no middle class in terms of dollars, but there's also, it doesn't seem like there's a big middle class in terms of ability either. And then there's a bunch of guys at the bottom.
I'll say Roethlisberger beat us, and that's every other is a lower end quarterback that we've played.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, Blake Bortles beat him and beat him pretty badly. So anyway, it is what it is. I'm going to give you my number one pick is Matthew Judon. Terrific game for Judon, and I've left him off the list a couple times when he could have been, but he's performing at a very high level. 38 snaps to do what he did, have two sacks, have that forced fumble that Owosu eventually recovered. Very impressive game, and he's made a large leap in these last 5 weeks to being a much better player than I was sure that he would be. He was just one of the competitors for an outside linebacker position. Now he's got the Sam job, and he's got it nailed down. Bowser is not really threatening him at this point. Smith has been transferred to be an inside pass rusher, so it's really mostly Matthew Judon and Suggs sharing those key outside linebacker roles.
All right, now it's time for the film study mailbag. Head on over to Twitter, send your questions in for Ken using the hashtag #FilmStudyMailbag, and let's start with Mr. Ed at Vengeance. Says, It seems like Dean used more four-man rushes in this game than several previous. How often did other teams do the same against Green Bay? That's an intricate question. Not sure if you have that answer prepared.
Well, I have it for the Ravens' pass rush in this game. First of all, 31 out of 42 times the Ravens rushed four. One time they rushed three, and 10 times they rushed five. So the 31 times they rushed four, the Packers averaged only 3.8 yards per play, were sacked four times, and turned the ball over three times. Now, what I don't have is the other part of his question.
Right, other teams.
Which is, how often did other teams rush the passer against the Packers? So I'm sorry, Mr. Ed. I'd love to answer your question. I'd love to know the answer to your question, but I don't have it for you.
All right. Edgar Catano asks, are you noticing any change the last couple of games on the way the two safeties, Weddle and Tony, are used as a – he's saying use Weddle more as a CF and Tony as a box safety.
Yeah, so Weddle more as a center fielder, and that's, I think, exactly what he's doing. He's playing the back end safety, as we'd call it. It's interesting because the Ravens have to – and I think we've covered some of this, Edgar, and I know you appreciate that fact that I do really believe that Weddle's being played on the back end more and Tony's being played more up front, and I think it's a conscious decision coming out of the bye to change the defense and make that more of the thing. I certainly hope it is. It's interesting. There's two things about your question I really like. First of all, the box safety. I have heard Pease bristle at that term when he's asked a question about it. Do you see so-and-so as more of a box safety? He goes, that's kind of an old-timey term, and he gets real upset if you bring that up. So if you ever meet him, that'd be a great thing to bring up and see how he reacts to it. What do you think about this box safety here and there? But the other thing about center fielder is Weddle obviously is long in the tooth, and despite the fact that he's now playing pretty well, has four interceptions, and I think there's a reasonable chance he'll return to being closer to the Eric Weddle of 2016 than the Eric Weddle of early 2017 for the rest of the season. But the Ravens still need to think about drafting their next great safety. And it's a pick that if they really want a playmaker, they're probably going to have to think about assigning their first round draft pick to it. So oftentimes this is a pick between 5 and 10. You get the best safety in the draft after the best two quarterbacks are gone, the best left tackle's gone, the best two pass rushers gone, then there's maybe a corner also, but anyway, usually between 5 and 10 somewhere is the best safety in the draft. Ravens may not be perfectly set for it this year, but maybe there's two guys in one draft and they get somebody with the 14th or 16th or even the 21st pick. Ed Reed, went number 24. So that was in the day when people devalued the position a little bit. Now they know, and they spend more.
All right. You addressed this a little bit, but Cardi, Matt, do you think Marlon Humphrey will take on Carr's starting position from now on?
Yeah, I think it's his to lose at this point. He played the last 49 snaps of the game. Go by actions and ignore words when it comes to this, whatever the coaches will say. The coaches will say, oh, Carr's getting back. He's going to play a lot for us. There'll be a rotation. There'll be this. There'll be that. I don't believe it. Carr played every snap of the year coming into this. I think they basically want to play two corners if they can do it. They couldn't do it because of Jimmy's health. So now it'll be Carr replacing Jimmy for maybe 30-35% of his snaps. Jimmy playing two-thirds of the snaps on one side. And I believe Humphrey will basically play every snap that he's healthy for the rest of the year.
All right. Rob McDonald asks about Suggs. How many times in his career would you estimate future Hall of Famer T-Sizzle has masterfully destroyed a screenplay by diagnosing it?
Many, many times. The Ravens have an unbelievable track record of having their linebackers, and I think Wink Martindale, who is their linebackers coach, is probably the key to this, although there's probably some player-to-player teaching as well in terms of teaching good outside linebacker play where you foil the screen pass. And Suggs, he understands the set of indicators that give away a screen very well. If I had a sports analogy, I'd talk about Joe Morgan in the 1970s, consecutive MVP awards, I'm sure you know who he is, for the Reds, but he's a great base stealer at that point. And they always said, don't ever pitch out against Joe Morgan, it's a complete waste of time, because he has all of these different cues he's looking for. And if he sees one, he'll look for the second, and he'll look for the third, and he'll just be there smiling at first base when you pitch out, and you'll have given away a ball. So no reason to do it. And Sizzle's the same way. I think he probably has 5 or 6 or 7 cues he looks for. Something away about the way the quarterback is shifty-eyed before the snap. Something about the furtive glance he gets from that fullback on his side. If that guard does something to move his foot a certain way, he knows that he's coming over to try and get in front of the play. And he's extremely good. One of the things to do is I think he baited the Packers and Hundley into thinking that screen pass was going to work by actually starting to rush. He may have well picked up on it. And then the guy was past him, and he actually was able to drop back. And now Hundley's, oh, crap, what do I do with the football now? And then another half second later, Judon, you know, flattened him on the ground for a 13-yard loss. So he is one of the great things that Sizzle done. His instinctiveness is at such a high level. It'd be a shame if he cannot coach at some point.
I mean, that's the same thing we said about Ed Reed, that he could be a good coach if he wanted to down the road.
That's right.
So, all right. Again, get your questions in to @FilmStudyMailbag, or I guess #FilmStudyMailbag on Twitter, or #, if you're a older gentleman.
Oh, boy.
All right, Ken, what is up on Russell Street Report right now?
Okay, so we've got articles coming on the offensive line. There'll be an article coming Wednesday in all likelihood. We will record our podcast tomorrow. That's right, Josh? And
yeah.
We'll have it post on Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah. We're doing everything a little early this week because of Thanksgiving.
Okay, and that'll be wonderful. Hope you have a great Thanksgiving. You follow me at Film Study Ravens. And otherwise, you're on Russell Street Report, Film Study. And tell them about your show, Josh.
Yeah, you can.
The air.
Yep, you can follow me at Josh Soroka on Twitter. My show is Section 336, and we talk Baltimore sports. I'm sure this week we'll get into some of the conversations that have been going around about the Orioles interested in pitching, plus the Orioles signed a right-hand pitcher that you've never heard of. So we'll get into that.
Who was that?
Oh, I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, okay. Foreign guy, or was it what was it?
No. No, now you're making me...
I'm sorry.
I do not have it in front of me.
I'll listen to the show. I don't want to spoil the show anyway.
We haven't recorded the show yet, so I gotta look up. Remember, I was out of the country this week, so I'm guessing they signed someone. I saw stuff come across my phone that they signed some right-hand pitcher that I never heard of, so I'm assuming the listener also hadn't heard of him.
Okay.
I think he's just a bullpen guy.
Okay.
But there's rumors of guys the Orioles are interested in, so that's what we'll get into, I'm sure.
Okay, you didn't do any scouting on your trip, you know, because there's a lot of cricket players there. Remember that movie?
Yeah. No, I did not see. We did not leave the boat a whole lot, and most of the people, I'd say 99% of the people on the boat, not very athletic, so it'd be okay.
So. All right, so they're people my age, that's what you're saying.
No, I'm saying much older than you and much larger than you. We're the two demographics. So
very good, okay.
All right, if they were younger, maybe a few linemen.
All right, very good.
All right, Ken, well, have a good night, and we'll talk later this week.
All right, Josh, have a great Thanksgiving.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
Some cars are comfy on the inside, but don't have power on the outside. And some cars have the horsepower, but none of the comfort. I used to think there weren't any cars that were the total package. But that all changed when I got my Honda SUV. It's rugged and sophisticated. And right now, Honda has deals on the entire Honda SUV lineup. CR-V, HR-V, Pilot, Passport, you name it. So if you're looking for a car that's the total package, the only place you'll find it is at your local Honda dealer. Hurry before they're all gone.